Now for our scripture, Genesis 39, 1 through 18. Now Joseph was taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. He was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hands. So Joseph found favor on his sight and attended him. He made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and with him there he had no concern for anything but the food that he ate. Now Joseph was handsome and good-looking, and after a time his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look with me here. My master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my hand. He has not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself. Because you are his wife, how then could I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And although she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not consent to lie beside her or to be with her. One day, however, when he went into the house to do his work, and while no one else was in the house, she caught hold of his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled outside, she called out to the members of her household and said to them, "See, my husband has brought among us a Hebrew to insult us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And when he heard me raise my voice and cry out, he left his garment beside me and fled outside." Then she kept his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, "That Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to me to insult me. But as soon as I raised my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled outside."
Twenty-two years ago, I was a newly minted teacher in my first teaching job at Bethany Academy in Bloomington. In preparing my classroom for the year, one day I sat down and tackled the huge mountain of mail that gathers when school is not in session in the summer. In that pile of mail was this envelope from the Hennepin Theater Trust with the headline, "An exciting opportunity awaits you. Open immediately." And so, being the curious person I was, I opened it. Inside, there was a letter inviting all schools with elementary-age choirs to audition to sing one evening during the production of this new Broadway-bound show that was on tour here in Minneapolis, starring Donny Osmond. The show was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I was very intrigued and excited and took it to my administration, and they said no. They said it wasn't the right thing for a Christian school to do. So I was very bummed. And Technicolor fever that fall and into the entire school year and the next school year gripped Minneapolis, and several of my colleagues were able to take their kids and participate and really had a great experience. And much like the show Glee has influenced music classrooms just in the last years, everybody at some point was singing Joseph, or their marching band was doing Joseph, or their swing choir was doing Joseph. It really took this place by storm. And truth be told, the musical is one of my favorites, In fact, one of my bucket list items is that I would like to be the narrator, because I have directed it, but I want to be in the show. And this causes problems at the Adolphson Seifert household, because Keith detests any musical by Andrew Lloyd Webber. He is the Sondheim half of the relationship. The show uses a variety of musical genres and settings to tell the story of Joseph in an action-packed, rollicking, feel-good story, even in the darkest moments of Joseph's life. Of course, let's be real and truthful. The show glosses over, or turns a blind eye, or outright skips much of the drama that makes up the story of Joseph. Hence the title for my sermon, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Roller Coaster. So first things first, how did we get here talking about Joseph from last week's story talking about Abraham and Sarah? That's a really good question, so let's buckle up, and that is a roller coaster ride of itself, and I'm going to give it to you real quick. Isaac, Abraham and Sarah's son, the one that was going to be sacrificed and wasn't, marries Rebekah, daughter of Laban. Rebekah becomes pregnant with two sons, they're wrestling in the womb, and God proceeds to tell her that the older is going to serve the younger, which is not how it works in society at the time. And so Esau and Jacob are born. Jacob steals the birthright from Esau through a bowl of stool, and then steals Esau's blessing from his father Isaac through trickery at mom's insistence. Jacob is sent away for his protection, encounters God through a dream, builds a sacred pillar at Bethel, sees a well, meets Rachel, falls in love. And then the deceiver becomes the deceived, as Jacob is tricked into marrying Leah by his new father-in-law, Laban. Laban convinces Jacob to stick around for 7 more years and work for him. In exchange, he will be able to marry Rachel, which he does. And then Leah, the unloved wife, bears children to Jacob first, 3 sons. Rachel gets angry with Jacob, gives her servant Bilhah to Jacob as a wife. She bears 2 sons. Leah, realizing she stopped bearing children, gives her servant to Zilpah as Jacob as a wife. So we're up to 4 wives now, in case you're counting. Zilpah gives birth to 2 sons, and then Leah ends up giving birth to another son and a daughter. And then, take a breath, God finally remembers Rachel, and she conceives and bears Jacob a son in his old age, Joseph. Jacob gathers the family, and they leave Laban to return to the Promised Land. En route to the Promised Land, he encounters his brother Esau. Reconciliation happens. God changes Jacob's name to Israel at Bethel. Rachel bears Jacob 1 more son, Benjamin, and then dies in childbirth. And now here we are. The family of Jacob lives in Canaan, the land promised, the promised land that was originally promised to Abraham and to Isaac. So let's talk about Joseph and this little problem he finds himself in. How in the world did he end up in the house in Egypt, in the household of one of Pharaoh's court officials? Well, in Genesis 37, the start of the Joseph narrative, we learn a couple things right off the bat that are important. First, remember that Joseph is the child of Rachel, which is Jacob's best-loved wife. So, this is the best-loved son. Secondly, we discover that Joseph's other chief distraction is that he is a tattletale, reporting everything the older brothers do in the field with the sheep and as they're taking care of the fields back to Papa Jacob. Why Joseph is telling tales about his brothers is not made clear in the text, but offers a glimpse into his character. Third, we learn that Joseph, the favorite son, is given a long-sleeved robe because Jacob loves him more than any of the other sons. While both the musical and the King James Version call this a coat of many colors, the Hebrew for the coat, kithoneth pasam, has nothing to do with colors. It is a very distinctive and luxurious garment, and as the older brothers watch their spying younger brother parade around wearing the very symbol of Jacob's obsession toward the chosen son, they can only harbor the greatest ill will for him. Their anger is so great that they cannot speak peaceably to him. That is, that they could not greet him with the customary and expected shalom. And honestly, can you blame them? And then if the coat and the spying wasn't bad enough, he starts dreaming these dreams. dreams about his brother's sheaves of wheat bowing down to his sheave of wheat. And then the sun, the moon, and the stars are all going to bow to him. Now, honestly, if I was Joseph at this point, I would have kept my mouth shut. But no, he goes and blabs that to the brothers and to Jacob. And the brothers are now really angry. And Dad's going, you need to not be saying these things. And so just as we saw last week in the Abraham and Sarah story, God's chosen people sometimes have personality quirks that cause major headaches. Is it any surprise then that the brothers hatch this little plot, a rather elaborate plot, to kill him? So Jacob sends Joseph off on his merry little way, go see how the brothers are doing at Shechem, and let me know what's going on. And they see him coming from afar and say, okay, time to put an end to this. And they're going to kill him. But Reuben, the firstborn, and desiring a meal ticket to get back in favor with Dad as the firstborn, instead suggests, well, let's just strip the coat from Joseph and throw him in a pit. And that's what they do. And so then they're off here arguing about what they're going to do with Joseph and how they're going to sell him to the Ishmaelites. Well, this merry band of traveling Midianite traders comes along. And, well, they kind of short-circuit the plan because they take Joseph out of the pit and they sell him to the Ishmaelites instead of the brothers selling him to the Ishmaelites. And that causes a whole other situation. So the brothers, to get out of said situation, take the luxurious coat, dip in blood, take it back home to Dad and say, I'm sorry, look what happened. And Jacob goes into this extreme time of mourning and will not be comforted at all, no matter what anybody does. And the brothers make the situation worse. In fact, while Jacob thinks son is dead, Joseph is very much alive, and he's been sold not to work in the quarries or on the great building projects of the day in Egypt, but to a rich and powerful man, Potiphar, a captain of Pharaoh's personal bodyguard. Though the brothers may think they have seen the last of their arrogant sibling, the relationship with him is by no means over. Joseph's remarkable roller coaster story is just beginning. I want to note something with you at this point. The phrase, "the Lord was with Joseph," will appear again and again and again in the story, reminding us that through this roller coaster ride, God is with Joseph, even in the complexity of his humanity. So we arrive at today's passage. Potiphar notices right away that the Lord was with him because everything Joseph touches prospers in his hands. As a result, Potiphar makes him overseer in his house and all that he had. The emphasis is on the inclusiveness of Joseph's increasing power and importance in the house of Potiphar, and on the remarkable ways in which Joseph bestows a blessing wherever he turns. Joseph is so trusted by Potiphar that he turns everything he has into the hands of Joseph. Now stop and think about this. Hebrew slave, Egyptian household, serving Pharaoh, and they're saying, here, you just take care of everything. With Joseph around, who needs to worry about household things? Well, Joseph does, because this creates a small problem which actually becomes a big problem. The narrator notes at this point Joseph was handsome and really good looking. In rabbinical midrash, the rabbis suggest that actually Joseph was a really vain guy, comparing him to someone who looked in the mirror all the time, fixing his face and fixing his hair. Potiphar's wife notices this and starts chasing him around the house saying, sleep with me. This is not a good scenario. Joseph says no, but not for the reasons you think. Joseph's arrogance shows up again in verse 8-9. Look, my Lord, having me, does not know what is happening in the house, and all that he has given into my hand, he is not greater in this house than I am. This is really an interesting way to respond to Potiphar's wife. It's the claim of a supremely confident man, completely aware of his enormous authority. In fact, if we listen really carefully, sounds boastful. There's a theme there. The Storyteller's Companion to the Bible states in their notes that Joseph is, in fact, more concerned with Potiphar's trust rather than fear of transgressing a sexual taboo. In any case, we know what happens next. He's alone in the house with her. She makes the approach again, grabs his clothes. Joseph runs out of the house. She cries rape. Potiphar flies in a rage and throws Joseph into a dungeon. Now stop and notice this with me. Potiphar would have had been within his means to kill Joseph because, after all, Joseph was a slave in the land of Egypt. But again, instead, he's sent to the Beverly Hills of prisons, and that familiar line appears again. But the Lord was with Joseph, showing him steadfast love and giving him favor in the eyes of the keeper of the prison. The Lord was with Joseph. Soon, as we now expect from this golden boy, Joseph has charge of all the prisoners who were in prison. Everything that was done there was done by Joseph. Just like Potiphar before him, the keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's hands. Why? Because the Lord was with him. Joseph has once again fallen into a pit, but once again has come out smelling like a rose. And in the passages following, because this will go all the way to chapter 50 of Genesis, Joseph will finally come to understand the meaning of his dreams, will have the arrogance mostly rounded off through the prison stint, reunite with his family, and will save the fledgling nation of Israel from famine and starvation. So, we've covered a lot of ground, but what does this mean for us? Well, it reminds us of two things. Number one, as we've seen with Joseph, as we've seen with Moses, and so many others, God chooses imperfect people to do God's work. And God takes our imperfectedness, that's probably not a word, but we'll use it, to do great things. The second thing is this. In our darkest hours, our darkest times, when we think that we are totally and completely alone, we're not, because God is walking there with us. We may not see God, we may not feel God, but as the story of Joseph demonstrates, we're not alone, because the Lord was with him, and the Lord is with us.